And just getting on a personal level, I've met your family. They're lovely people and super intelligent. So they're clearly all a reflection of you.
My dad, and my father-in-law and mother. Yeah. Not.
How in your journey, both military and non-military journeys, how important were your family and to you to support your leadership journey?
Hugely important. From the leadership I got from my dad, as a kid, you know, my dad being a scoutmaster and one of my best friends' dads being a scoutmaster, and the leadership and the integrity and morality that they showed us in decision making all those years, to my family being part of who I was and giving me the ability to volunteer for the next thing for the military, to, you know, I would not have been able to achieve what I achieved in the Army and in business now, without the support of my family being there to say, it's okay. My wife standing up and saying, I got this. And, you know, not in so many words, but knowing that she did, when I got a phone call and I packed my bag and I left, and she was there to handle that, because I didn't have to worry about that because she took care of it all. I mean, that enabled me to focus on what was next and what I could do to make my missions more successful in the military.
And using an old analogy, happy wife, happy life. What was the payback for that?
Let's see, how many days in Cancun have we had over the last? it was a lot of that, but you know, that's all tongue in cheek. It was, really it's an interesting way of putting it. One of the things I told my kids, particularly my oldest boy, Braden, you know, when he said he wanted to go in the Army, I said, you know, you've already served. You served unwillingly your entire life. They were conscripted. That is exactly what they were. They were conscripted from the time they were born because of the family they were born into. And they served in that capacity. Because they made as many they made a lot of sacrifices. Because dad wasn't there, you know. My daughter, she hadn't said it in a while, so I probably shouldn't say this out loud. She used to know how many birthdays I had missed, you know, and the fact that I'd been home for much, much fewer birthdays than I'd ever been around when she was growing up.
That must be quite tough.
Yeah, it is. You know, time is our most precious asset, and it is something you can never get back. And, I don't have all the Stoic quotes memorized, but I'm working on it. But, you know, the man who steals my time will never get it back. And I can't remember the rest of that quote, but basically it's saying, you know what? Woe be unto the person who steals my time, wastes my time, takes time away from me, because I can never get that back. And, you know, the family events and those moments, they're past. You have to get over it. But, you know, to really kind of stay in that focus of time, that's the great equalizer, and is the most precious thing we have.
Yeah.
And where you spend it demonstrates where your values truly are.
Well, that's powerful. So you have had your military family or your business family, if you like, and your own family, who, as I said, they're lovely people. How do you manage, what tricks can you give our young or existing leadership world out there today on managing the needs and wants of both those families?
Well, the first thing is, there's no such thing as business and life, and there's no such thing as a life business balance.
Right.
It is all life. Everything is life. And if you start to think about it that way, everything is life. You have to understand what's important to you. And then you can take it a step further. And this is a little, I don't know. This is a technique.
Yeah.
Where you can list your life's traits, your take your life and divide it into categories, if you will. And look at these categories and grade these categories and where you rate in these categories and monitor which category needs focus. So yep. In other words, let's say I've got my business, I've got my friends, I've got my hunting, I've got my family, I've got my wife, sort of breaking things out like that. Well, next week I'm going hunting. So guess what's the priority? My hobby, my hunt, hanging out with my friends and hunting.
Yeah.
But when I come back from that, my priority for that week is probably going to be spending time with my wife, Suzanne, and putting her back up and making sure that, I'm taking care of my relationship with her. And then I've also got to get back into my business. So what do I need to do with my business? And I might be working 12, 14 hour days for a week to catch things back up on my business. And if you start to look at your life in that sort of way and you monitor it, you can balance your whole life. Tony Robbins does a thing called, he calls it a light wheel of life. There's different versions of it. Cause I've done some things with my coaching. There's a version of wheel of life, but if you look at your wheel of life and it's, you got like your spiritual category is down here one or two and your fitness category is 10 and it's not a very smooth riding wheel, is it? Right. So how do you balance that out? Because that's what it all comes down to is life, and if you can balance that wheel out, if you're all tens, we need to talk, because you're either doing something, you either got a really strange way of measuring things, or we need to sell what you got. Because if you're all tens in that wheel of life, wow.
No, I get the analogy. Sometimes I feel like a clown spinning plates. And
that's right. You got to run around. Zing, zing, zing.
Yeah. Just try to stop them all fall off and break it on the floor. Man, I could take this conversation down so many paths, Otis, and it's so good that you can share so much in terms of insights. But I've got this question in front of me, and it just keeps jumping out at me. And you're the person who's going to have an answer for this. No pressure, by the way.
Is it multiple choice? Or true false? Because true false can be really tricky.
This is a Socratic discussion, so it's philosophical. There's no right or wrong answer.
Damn it, I hate those.
Where do you see the differences between leadership and management?
Well, good leaders are also good managers. And I think there's become a misnomer in there where manager has become this bad word. I've used this as an analogy too, and just like what you're saying, good leaders versus good managers, or leadership versus management. And I've seen some things, and as I look back on it, I really want to come up with a different term than manager, because I can have great managers, but they're also good leaders, aren't they? You think about it. It's What's happened is, for some reason, we've had to come up with this title, this differentiating title to put, because we want to have leaders and we want to show the opposite of good leaders, right? Well, in my book, by the way, just kind of like life is all life. There's no such thing as a good and bad leader. There's leaders, and then there's people who hold a title. That's right. So If we use the term manager, which has kind of been delineated as a bad thing, but if we look at that as a title instead of the term manager, somebody who holds a position and is not a leader. They are micromanagers. They don't trust their organization to perform the jobs that they have. They don't have a vision. They don't have a positive outcome. And they are always risk averse and looking over their shoulder for the next thing to go wrong, as opposed to a leader is an optimist. And in order to be a successful leader, you have to be an internal optimist who understands risk. When I say you're an optimist, I don't mean you don't accept risk and you don't believe there's risk. You have to understand risk and know what the possible outcomes are. I always say second and third order effects, but a great leader is going to understand what the fourth and fifth order effects are. That's the kind of vision you have to have. And you always have to believe that no matter what, the outcome will be positive. Even if it's a kick in the jimmy, you still have to believe that there's some goodness in being kicked in the jimmy. And understanding that, that's what leadership, leaders have vision. Leaders trust people to perform. And when they don't perform, they look to create opportunity for them, for the ones who couldn't perform or failed to perform. They look for the solution to help them perform better next time, giving them opportunities to succeed over and over again, to give them opportunities to improve. Because they know that if they do that for their team, the individuals in their team, the individuals in their team will create a better team. And I'll go into my little favorite phrase. If we have better organizations, better leaders create better organizations. And with better organizations, we have better communities. And with better communities, we have a better world. That's kind of, that's my mantra. That's my go-to mission for what I do, why I do it, is to create better leaders so that we have those better organizations, better communities, and better world. That's what I believe.
That's a phenomenal philosophy, Otis. I truly respect you and for not just having it but maintaining it. So I just love conversations with people like your good self, where you just open up so much opportunity for questioning. Let's start with optimism. Is that genetically programmed? Is that part of our spiritual makeup, or is that something we have to create ourselves?
It's a choice. We all have the opportunity to choose how anything affects us. And in whether or not you're aware of it or not, it is a choice. And I talk about mindfulness, other people talk about mindfulness. And really, mindfulness is understanding that when something happens, we get to choose how we take action. That's the most powerful thing to do. As you understand, more self-understanding means I know that thing can trigger me. And do I want that thing to piss me off? You know, it's my go-to is road rage. I'm driving down the highway, somebody cuts me off. Last night, driving in here to Boise, there's a stupid traffic jam that took us the last 15 miles took us an hour and a half to drive. And as would happen, there's people who believe that they have more priority than everybody else and do the whole drive on the shoulder thing. And then there's people who try to stop them. And then there's people who think that they should get this spot. And it's like, hey, you know what? I'm okay. You know, you may have a reason to do that, and I don't know what that is, and I'm okay with that. If you believe that you are more important than me and you need to get in front of me in this position, in this queue, okay, I'm okay with that, because you know what? I'm going to get there, and then I'm going to get there when I get there, and I'm going to be happy when I get there. I'm maybe a little bit tired because I spent an extra hour and a half in the truck, but I'm going to get there, and it's okay. I choose how that happens. And you know what? When people get all pissed off and laugh and shake their finger at me and things like that, I just smile and wave back and I say, God bless you. Have a great day. Take care.
That's
my choice.
Yeah. It's funny you go to road rage as an analogy, because I sort of agree with you. Road rage is one of the most pointless emotional outpourings that I've ever seen in my adult life. And yet it doesn't matter if someone's dressed in jeans and a t-shirt or a suit and tie or a set of overalls. It manifests itself in people. And it's just completely pointless, because whatever's causing the problem on the road is probably not something you can adjust. The only thing you can adjust is yourself and your approach to it, which segues us back nicely into the world of leadership, because I visualize your micromanagers or your less optimistic leaders as sort of these, I call them balloon heads. So they're okay till there's a problem, and because they haven't evolved those competencies, they start inflating, right? And I just visualize their head getting bigger and bigger and redder till it's at the point of going pop, and at which point they've lost all integrity in their leadership or managerial role. To my mind, they just become a comedy act. So how do you evolve? If you struggle, if you may be a natural pessimist, or you might have an environmental or educational influence that keeps sucking the sunshine out of your day, how do you evolve that sense of optimism, or how do you get yourself on that path to enlightenment?
You first have to realize, going back to, you can make the choice, and then ask yourself, how does that serve me? How did that action serve me? And am I a better person for having taken that action? To use road rage again. So somebody cuts me off and I lay on the horn, I flip them off, and then I jump around and get in front of them and tap the brakes. And did I teach that person a lesson? Did it serve me? Do I feel better? Or am I just more angry and trying to be the bully tough guy? What did it serve to do that action? That's where I'd go with that.
And that's a good place to start, isn't it? That just bit of self-awareness that you've had that outburst, and then maybe take yourself into your quiet room, have a sit down and, give yourself a bit of a talking to for an attitude adjustment.
If you're okay with it, then okay, that's you. It's not me. And if you want to live a happier life, you've got to come to terms with those sort of things. If you want to blame other people, you want to accept that everything is your fault, whether it's, something that somebody six levels above you, or a decision the president made, or the prime minister, or whatever, you can do that and, claim the victim.
Yeah.
Or you can take charge of your life and create a better life for yourself. And let me tell you, I feel a hell of a lot better at the end of the day when I've been happy most of the day, because, you're not going to be skipping the rope, happy-go-lucky all day long. Things are going to happen.
Yeah.
But when I'm majority of that way at the end of the day, I feel a heck of a lot better at the end of the day. And it's pretty nice, to look back on it and go, man, I don't have to say, wow, that was a great day. I don't have to do that every day. Yeah. But I sure have to, I just feel better. I mean, you can feel it inside of you, as opposed to that at the end of the day.
Yeah, you want to feel uplifted. Yeah. So I'd like to come back a couple of steps, because one of my guests on the show, we were talking about military folks, and I think, and I've known a lot, as have you, over the years, are actually very human and very humane. And yet the perceptions of the military, particularly military transitioning into civilian life, is not always that. And what lessons do you think the civilian leadership world can take from military people, because military environments, whether it's, I'm worried about saying the word now, but I'm going to throw it out there, the Green Berets. That doesn't sound too French, does it?
Oh, don't worry, we'll work on your English later on.
You'll get me speaking Texan before you know it. whether you're the Green Berets or the Parachute Regiment or a naval force, the military really is a microcosm of society. Mm. And under extreme pressures or dislocation of society, military folks are generally required to perform, switch it on, switch it off. And yet this sort of perception that military people could be humane, it sometimes goes missing in our translation. So yeah, the very simple question, how do military folks repackage themselves in that sense, so civilian leadership can draw down from an awesome group of people?
You know, I had this conversation quite often with vets that I or soon to be vets, the active duty service members that I coach and work with. And, you know, it really, the truth is the veterans have all the knowledge and experience. They just need to know the language. They need to translate. It's no different than what I was talking about earlier when I prepared to go to some place, whether it was Kosovo, Bosnia, Iraq, whatever, and I did the analysis of the area and I understood it. You got to know the same thing. Really, and quite frankly, I had this conversation with a veteran this morning. Quite frankly, it's no different than going from the medical field to the retail stores or vice versa. You know, you have all this experience and knowledge and understanding, leadership, problem solving, planning, execution, monitoring, and all these sort of things, risk understanding and risk mitigation techniques. But you got to learn to say it in a different fashion so that it applies. And, you know, I used to say, well, the one thing the military folks don't come to town with is profit and loss. I don't know if I agree with that anymore. The more I've been doing what I do, you know, profit and loss, we still understand profit and loss. It's just a different type of profit and loss.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe even cost and value. And mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. So outside of language, and that's really interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who's struggling with his transition. And he was saying to me, I was saying to him, well, what's your business philosophy for the civilian world? He said, I just get it done. I said, but that doesn't really translate. It's a big hurdle because he's got a lot of skills and ability for the world he's in. And the learning the language of the world you're going into, is not, people don't like learning languages. I, on my journey over the years, I've learned 6 languages. I think I can still master. Sure. Not all of them are English. And I loved it. I loved trying to articulate in someone else's language. And sometimes other languages give you words and phraseology that when you understand the basis of them, are much more interesting than your own coded vernacular. But it really is a tough task. So you've done it. You've achieved it. You are mythological, as we discovered earlier in the show. But how do you make that step to changing the language?
Well, I mean, you got to decide you want to. Just like anything else, you have to decide that that's what you want to do, and then put forth the effort to doing it. Trust the process. You know, you can't just snap your fingers and learn it. Yeah. What can you do? You know, I also talk about putting yourself in a mindset of performance and a mindset of self-improvement, continuous self-improvement. The only way you can do that is is that you have a vision of how to get better in everything you do. And how do I learn a language? I spend time studying it.
Yeah.
I put the work in to research a culture and understand the culture. And when I have the opportunity to interact with the culture, I listen and I watch and I observe.
Yeah.
And I learn in that way. And when I have the opportunity, I ask questions and I learn and I, you know, it just kind of reminds me. So one of the things that, one of the great techniques that I learned, through both of the nonprofit veteran organizations that I work with, the Commit Foundation and the Honor Foundation, one of the things that we have our fellows do, and our fellows are active duty service members that are transitioning to the civilian life. We have them do 1,000 cups of coffee, we call it. There's lots of different analogies that I've used, but what better way to learn from people than to sit down, buy them a cup of coffee, and listen. Tell me about this company you work for. Tell me about your business. How did you come up with that business? Why is that important? Where are you making money? Where does the money come from? You ask those questions, and it's like, holy crap. It's not that complicated. Business, work, I mean, whatever you want to call it, whether you want to be an entrepreneur and figure out business, or you want to go work for somebody and be part of a team or larger organization, it's not that hard. But you got to be willing to learn. You got to be open-minded to accepting and changing the way that you talk and use words around other people.
I think that's hugely important. And that just, we never stop learning no matter how old we are. And but I think the thing about being willing to ask questions is first you've got to be willing to listen, which means you've got to button your lip. And as I was told at a younger age, you've got two ears and one mouth for a reason. And but then I think there's some of the fear of asking questions is people don't like to give this sense that they don't know something. We're sort of a bit bound up in our own egos at times, aren't we?
Yeah, but that's where I think this 1,000 cups of coffee is so unique, because it does a couple of things. You know, you have a one-on-one conversation, and whether or not, you know, you can do it in person or now that everybody's using, you know, the online stuff in Zoom, you can do it across the country. You can ask those questions and you can listen, because it's one-on-one. So you're not, who are you going to be embarrassed in front of if you don't understand? The one person that's there and yourself. You got to ask yourself some bigger questions if that's the problem. But the other thing that I think is so critical in staying in that aspect of a active duty service member, and this goes across international borders, an active duty service member transitioning. And oh, by the way, I'll put a plug in, first responders also, the firemen and the policemen that run these similar problems.
Yeah.
But is extending your network, because when we're in the military, our tribe looks like us, right?
Yeah.
And now it's time to change tribes, if you will. You're not going to leave your tribe, but you're going to change tribes. Because you always got the veteran tribe to go back to. Don't ever forget that. And that's a lesson to learn that most of us have learned over and over again.
Yeah.
But you got to add to your tribe. You got to grow your network. If you're going to work in a different place, in a different industry, you better figure out what's going on in that industry so that you have knowledge of it. And one of the great ways of doing that is talking to people in that industry.
Yeah.
And how do you get to them? You get to them through your network. Through those cups of coffee, you know?
Yeah.
Angus and I, we're finishing up our cup of coffee together. Hey, Angus, I'm really interested in learning more about how to be a coach in rugby.
Yeah.
Anybody that you would recommend that you could introduce me to, you know, maybe give me some more information about how to coach rugby professionally or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of sense. Because right now, I may not have any connections into it, but if I have a vision towards that, How do I get there? Well, I've got to start stepping towards it. And what better way to do it than personal connections?
Yeah. So let's talk LTO Enterprises, because now you're the founder of LTO Enterprises. You've done all the right things that a career coach or a corporate coach or a leadership coach should do. You've written a book, you've got a podcast, you've got your own brand. But let's dig into the philosophy and foundations of LTO. Tell us a little bit about that organization and where your niche is in the market.
So, well, the foundation is enabling your success. And my mission statement is truly the mission statement of LTO Enterprise, creating better leaders, because better leaders create better organizations, better communities. And with better communities, we have a better world. So that's the foundation of what LTO is about. And what we do, what I do through LTO, is enable businesses to operate as a team, to create that flow. It's about that small business sitting around the table. When you have that opportunity, when you're that size business, your communications plan, your organization, your thoughts, your vision are all inherent, because it's instant crosstalk. But as you have more success and your business grows, if you're not careful, if you don't have a plan, a vision, and you don't have communications amongst your team, you get stovepipes. Because when we have thoroughbreds in our team, thoroughbreds run. And that's what we want. We want to get them running together as a team, not as a bunch of individuals taking off in a wild horse, so to say.
Yeah.
And what LTO does is they help bring those thoroughbreds back into a team, into a unified team, so that your business can accelerate and achieve greater success.
Yeah, that's awesome. And where do you see some of the challenges are? What problems are we solving with that approach in the world at large?
Well, first off, it's that lack of a unifying purpose in an organization.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of businesses talk about value, but they never write it down. They say, oh yeah, we got it. First thing is write down your values, capture your values, and truly make them part of who you are and everything you do. Because when you do that, that's step one of pulling everybody, breaking those stovepipes back down. Make sure you're all on the same sheet of music for values.
Yeah.
And then secondly is, what's the vision? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do in 5 years? What do you want to do in 10 years? What's your business going to look like? What's the vision? You know, another way of putting vision is, what's your exit plan? You know, that's kind of the accelerator word sort of thing, but it's the same thing. It's, what's your vision?
Yeah.
Because you have to have a unifying vision. So the core values and the vision give you values and purpose that pull your team together. And then how do you achieve that? What's the plan? What's the strategy? What are the goals and outcomes that you're looking to achieve as an organization? And agreeing to that and buy-in from the leadership, so that there's a unifying purpose. And now we're all going down the same road together. We're not running all in different directions thinking that this is what we need and this is what we need and that's what we need. We're pulling it all together to be a unifying team and moving at, you know, you can run. If you've ever been worth some horses, you know, you put eight horses on a team, you're going to move a heck of a lot more than you are with eight horses on a team all harnessed up together, compared to eight horses running in different directions.
Yeah. Thinking of Ben Hur now in the Colosseum. You've made me think, and culturally, you know, being an economic migrant in the US, there's a perception that I've heard about Americans don't, you know, too much government, or don't like governance, or, you know, this sense of independence, or in life, love and labor, if you like. So culturally, where would you say being a leader of Americans versus a leader of a bunch of people in a multicultural environment, where would you say the differences are, if any?
I honestly, you know, it's kind of a similar question that people have asked me about. Well, how do you lead millennials? Quite frankly, it's the same way you lead anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, how do you communicate to them? What's the most effective means to communicate to them?
Yeah.
What's the words and techniques and processes you need to use?
Yeah.
How do they listen and understand? And they're individuals.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I think it's a human trait that we do, but we have to be aware that we're doing it, is we generalize things. We put things in buckets so that we can understand it easier. It makes life simpler for us, right?
Yeah.
So all these people over here think this, and all these people over here think that.
Yeah.
You know, millennials do this.
Yeah.
Generation X does this.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, if you want to put everybody in the same bucket, but how do you feel when you're put in the same bucket with everybody else? You know, you have to treat people as individuals. You can start with a general rule of, okay, well, millennials, well, I gotta talk to them via Snapchat. Or if my target audience is women 35 to 50 or whatever my business, then I better get on Facebook because, you know, that's where the majority of them are.
Yep.
So you have to learn how to communicate. I think that's the bottom line. It doesn't matter whether, because, you know, I did this in NATO.
Yeah.
You know, my planning team for an operation that we were doing, you know, consisted of Brit, at a representatives, there we go, from UK, Germany, Poland, Greece, Australia, France, you know, keep going.
Yeah.
Hungary, but, you know, I could sit here and think of the guys that were there. But you know what? We were an international organization, but I treated this like a team, and everybody was equal because they were there representing, you know, putting in their country's two bits to the plan.
Yeah.
So that we could move forward because we had a unifying purpose, and they represented buy-in to the plan. So my communication, everybody was held to a standard, and everybody had the opportunity to put their say in.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was it.
I think your point there is we have to be conscious of implicit bias and put our own emotions or our own agendas or political persuasions in a parking lot and just leave them there because you're now leading a group that's multifaceted. And so that's... So let's look at servant leadership off the back of that, because
you really want me to get up on a soapbox because you just pushed one of my buttons.
Oh, did I? Oh, excellent. Yes, please. Because it's
name. It's tell me the name of a person that you would call a leader that was not a servant leader.
Well, I'd like to come back to the definition because
okay. You can't answer that question, can you?
Well, I can't really because I've...
That's my point, though.
Yeah, my leadership... Go on, sorry.
We put this servant leader, we created this terminology
yeah.
in an abstract way to make it sound more important. But I can tell you, I have never met anybody that I would call a leader that was not a servant leader. And a servant leader... meaning they care for their team. They care for the individuals and the purpose of their team and the outcomes that their team is there to achieve. That's what servant leader is. And that isn't that truly leadership?
Well, I think so too. And I think that's why I've had a bit of an internal conundrum around the phrase, because I was privileged that I got to Naval College. Probably more by luck than by judgment, but it opened my eyes to leadership. And to this day, 30 years on, I hold myself accountable to things I learned from Naval College. And so this terminology of servant leadership, to your point, in my mind, is just leadership. And I've struggled with, well, what's the servant piece all about? Because does that mean I have to prostrate myself and allow people to walk all over me? I found it very confusing. So thank you for cleaning up the confusion.
Hey, believe me, I don't remember when it happened. I may have been just a sidebar conversation I was having with somebody or what. And it was like, wait a second, time out. This ain't, name, you know, I asked them the same question that I just asked you. Name me one leader that you know that wasn't a servant leader. Anything, anybody, anywhere that you would call a leader that wasn't serving his team and trying to help his team succeed, because a leader understands that the only way that they're ever going to be successful is if the people on their team are successful. The success of a leader is built on the success of the individuals on the team. And as a leader, your job is to unify that success. So that, going back to our horse team and creating that flow in a team, everybody in the team has to believe that their success is embodied in the success of the organization. Mm-hmm. That is critical to an organization's success. And the only way you get that is the leader helping the team come together and squeezing that extra effort out of the individuals in that team, getting them to believe that the purpose of what they do is greater than themselves, and that the sum of the parts, the whole, is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah. Well, and that's so true. I remember when I first landed in China, I was in a town, a second tier town called Nanjing. Most people only remember it for its horrific piece of history, the rape of Nanking, as it was known back then. And I was one Westerner looking like this, managing a team of, everyone was Chinese. And I was very conscious of, under the skin of local culture, was British colonialism, white dude coming into Asian country, telling everyone what to do. And in the first, and my, I don't think my boss at the time, who was headquartered in London, which was great for him because that's where he grew up and lived. And there's a little bit of envy there because he had a fantastic apartment in the center of London, but there we are.
Didn't have any cultural issues either, did he?
No, absolutely none whatsoever. So it's very difficult for me to translate some of the stresses, but with the team, I was very clear that I'm here to help you get better. And if we can help you get better, then the organization will perform better. If the organization performs better, then I can give you more money. And, you know, it's a very simple process. And I am not of your land, and I will never claim to be like you because I'm not you. However, I will be sensitive to your culture. I've taken time to learn your language and so on and so forth. And the impact of that is non-tangible until you're under pressure and you see where those people stand. And, you know, it's I think it's hugely important. And you've articulated this all the way through this interview, that as a leader, you take time out to understand where you're at, how you're messaging your message, and understand what makes those people tick, because ultimately they're going to deliver. And I didn't see any sense of servitude, which is where the word servant confuses me. I just saw that this is a thing I have to do for them. I don't care what they look like or where they come from. They're my team and I have to look after them. And I'm one of those people, when I'm on your team, I'm on your team. And I would go into bat for my team against my executive if necessary. And what was ironic is we had a Chinese director who was but they're Chinese. I said, I don't care, mate, they're my team. And it's very interesting that I found myself a few times as an emigre, if you like, going into bat for my team in the face of people who are in a directorial role from their own nationality. That was quite a conundrum. Not really a conundrum, just an interesting learning experience. So I make you right. And servant leadership. Let's everyone who's listening to this show, let's throw out the word servant and just be leaders, because if you're a good leader, you're doing the job of servant leadership. And let's get rid of that buzzword, because it's a non-value add to the role.
That was probably somebody just trying to add a bullet to their fit rep.
Or their PowerPoint presentation.
That's right. Well, you know, so it makes you question, did the person who came up with the term servant leader, were they really good leaders? Or did they have to put an extra descriptor on there to remind themselves of being a servant?
It's a conscious learning process.
Yeah.
So, Otis, you've shared a phenomenal amount of stuff with us today, and I thank you wholeheartedly for that. And before we go on to the close of the show, just if people need to find you at LTO Enterprises, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me at the pub, but not every night. LTO-enterprises.com is my website. You can hit me up there. I've got a tab on there to schedule a free strategy session. Love it if you'd sign up for my newsletter, my Monday Moments newsletter, which I have a lot of fun publishing each week. It's a stoic quote of the week, something I learned, planning thought, business idea, veteran opportunity, and someone I met. Push it out every Monday morning, so use it to kick your week off right. Then you can also listen in on the Cam and Otis show that I do with my son Camden, the perpetual entrepreneur of the family. I think he got the heavy entrepreneur gene, so watch out for what he's always up to. It's interesting. And then what else? Follow me on social media, Instagram, LTO_enterprises, Twitter, and Facebook.
Cool. You're out there. Now, without giving away your own value, IP values, I've not met a single person who's had a bad word to say about you, which always disappoints me, because there's everyone.
Who are these people?
Everyone I've known who's met Otis just speaks so highly of you, and well done you. In all sincerity, I have to give you a round of applause, because that is such a rare, just a rare attribute to we're all human, we're all infallible, but to have this transgenerational, I've got to use the word transgender, which is completely the wrong word, but I'm going to have to use it, transgenerational, transgender, trans everything. Every time I ask people about Otis, they go, oh man, that he's awesome. He's just the top banana of everything. So what is the grease in your gravy that makes everyone think you're so amazing?
Well, thank you for that embarrassing moment.
Yeah, I knew you'd enjoy it.
I try to treat everybody the same, no matter what, no matter who they are, where they're from, what language they speak, what their accent is, what their skin color is, hair color, blue, yellow, pink, whatever, piercings, tattoos. I 100% try to treat everybody the same in all I do. And that's the, to me, the foundation. My other kind of pet peeve is standardization. I had a guy ask me a while back, a few weeks ago, about my thought on women in special forces training. And I told him, I'm perfectly fine with it as long as the standards remain the same. I don't care. If somebody's going to be next to me in an operation carrying a 100-pound ruck, I don't care. Carry that 100-pound ruck. It's everything's about standards in my book. Do my best. 100% do my best to treat everybody exactly the same as because we're all humans. We're all in this together, whether you want to be or not, and we're all going to go out of it at some time. And I'd like to leave it at a better place when I go out of it than it was before.
Well, good for you, Otis, because you're clearly having success at that. And I think those around you and any clients who find you are going to be blessed to have you. And it's just, I feel blessed to know you and also count you as a friend. So well done. So with those sort of closing thoughts, you've talked about integrity, humility, empowerment within culture and beyond your own culture, the trust triad as real attributes for good gravy and leadership. So who do you see in the world today as a modern embodiment of those leadership attributes?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I do have to go back to, you know, my old boss, Alvin McRaven, and just, you know, working for him, with him, what he's done since, you know, and I've had a couple others, you know, that, that wouldn't hold a grudge. You know, I had one boss, Mark Rosengard, great man, the protector of the regiment, self-acclaimed, because the regiment needed him, and even to this day, the regiment still needs him. Mark, if you're listening, the regiment needs you, brother. But he was the kind of guy that when we had a disagreement, I could walk into his office and either quietly close the door so I could sneak up on him or slam it so he knew I was there. And we would have a discussion, old school. And generally it would it would involve some discussions, sometimes more vocal than others, and generally digressed into some form of wrestling to see who was going to be right or wrong. You know, and it was a different kind of relationship. Not many people can have that relationship with their boss, and it was very different, you know. But that's, you know, when you have that kind of a relationship, that kind of opportunity to say, hey, look, I completely disagree with you. You don't have to finish up all the discussions with wrestling matches to see who wins. But you know, but to be able to have a one-on-one discussion with a member of your team, a subordinate or a superior, and tell them why you disagree, and you'd be able to lay out your reasons and justifications in that, bam, bam, bam. Hey, sir, I think this is the wrong way of doing this. Here's the reasons why. And that person genuinely listen to you and genuinely decide whether or not they agree with you and take that in. Man, that's a great man to work, great man or woman, because I've worked with some great women too. Yeah. So don't want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Great person to work with and work for.
Do you think that's something that the military world can bring to the civilian world, the ability to disagree without over ranting or politicizing or destroying a relationship?
It has absolutely nothing to do with whether you're military or not. I was just fortunate to learn that in the military.
Yeah, no, I agree with the sentiment. Sorry, I cut you off there, but I agree with the sentiment. I was just wondering, so I reframed the question. Do you think we're losing that ability in our society to have frank and honest discussions without fear of retribution?
I think we're allowing that to happen. And the reason that happens is because you're unsure of who you are and unsure of your values. So if you and I can have the conversation, whether it's over a cup of coffee, glass of water, or a whiskey, and have an in-depth conversation of completely differing views, and accept and understand that that's my view and that's your view, and be perfectly fine with it.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with why, you know, I believe that when you cannot accept somebody else's point of view and you believe that they have to have your point of view, then you are insecure in your point of view.
Yeah. Because Although it does have to be noted that Aberdeen Angus beef is better than Texas Longhorn steak.
Your taste buds are tainted, my friend. We're going to take you and Miss Marissa down to Austin and get you some real meat.
I think we do need to have a blind taste test on that challenge.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Otis, so you're continuing still, even though you're a man of maturity and full of wisdom, and you're still on your leadership journey. So,
you're trying to do that British nice insulting thing on me, calling me out as old. Is that what you're just trying?
I just buying into your cultural awareness.
Oh. Jeez, man, you're killing me.
So music and reading for me are two, luxuries, in the sense that they're the two things that on my leadership journey have helped me balance myself as a human on this road. So what I would like to ask you is, if you had one song that you could take with you on the continuation of your leadership journey, what would that song be?
Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Okay.
I mean, quite simply, you know, it's the story of his Ronnie Van Zandt's grandmother talking to him about how to be a man. And, you know, of course, right now I feel like I'm on a game show because I can't think of any of the words. But it's probably the one reason it just appeals to me, because there's so much about in the words of that song and the true meaning and purpose of that song that really resonate with me. And that's, yeah, so it's easy.
And when did that song, when was it released?
Uh, 1970s sometime. I can't remember off the top of my head, honestly.
Yeah, well, that's quite a song if you've carried it with you this long and want to take it on your journey. So in terms of leadership luxuries, my final question.
Sorry, I just thought of a smart old song for you.
Oh, go on.
BEERRUN, Beer Run.
Is that a song?
Yes, it is. You need to look it up there, Brit boy. five and a 10 and a sober driver.
I thought it was just a chore I had to do on a regular basis. I didn't realize there was a song about. Well,
then you'll have a theme song when you're going to do it.
I'll have to go and learn that one. So our last question on the show is, if you had one luxury you could take with you on your leadership journey that enables you to be the leader that you want to be, what is that luxury?
You mean like a superpower sort of thing, or you mean like a comfy chair sort of thing?
When you anything. Say it could be anything from any silo that becomes the thing that makes you who you are in your leadership role.
I think it would be the ability to either understand what people really, I think it's that I was going to say, or to help them understand, but it would be the ability to understand what people believe their success is, so that, you know, if I had that like ESP thing and it was just this one little nugget, and I could look at Angus and say, okay, so let me help you achieve that, you know, without, you know, I mean, because that's what I try to do as a coach for people, is help them define and understand what their success is so they can achieve it and have more of it.
Yeah.
but a lot of people have trouble with it. So if I could like have that one little superpower of mind reading to understand what people believe their success was and help them define it and achieve it. Yeah, that's it.
Now that's quite an esoteric superpower, and I'm not sure that Hollywood would sell many seats at the theater for that movie. But I think
I'm already looking on the script.
I think we have to work on that one and see if we can sell that script. I love hearing things like that, because someone asked me what would your superpower be, and I said hugs, right? Because hugs cure everything. So the ability to cure everything through hugs.
That's true.
That wasn't what they wanted to hear, though.
No, of course not. You think of the person standing on the sidewalk, you know, pre-Rona, of course.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, pre-hugs. And it's kind of cool to watch videos of things like that.
Well, it's something you can give Cam as his next entrepreneurial project. How do you create virtual hugs?
That's it.
Otis, thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights, your experience, and your thoughts with us. I wish you every success on your journey, and I would actually love to have you back on the show down the line, because there's so many questions here that are left unanswered. Would love to see you back here in the new year, explore a bit more about LTO Enterprises and leadership through the lens of a man who's never been doubted.
Yeah, right.
Thank you so much. It's good Thank to have you. And I wish you every success as you go forward.
Thanks. A lot of fun. Great questions. And I'm going to take a break now. A lot of hard thinking.
Yeah, I know. I can feel it.